the artificial insemination language in our statutes. Our statutes in 109.239 at sec 109.243 and 247 states that when there is artificial insemination after the birth of the child, the husband of the mother shall be presumed to be the father of the child. Now, in this case, obviously, you wouldn't want to have that kind of presumption operate because you would want the natural father to be considered the father of the child, and so you'd want to make that clear, or at least amend, I think, 109.239 at sec. The other thing is that our language concerning artificial insemination in our statutes contemplates a situation in which the donor is not known by the mother. In other words, it's an anonymous thing, and no one knows who the father of the child is. And, of course, this is a little bit different situation in which there's artificial insemination, but you do know who the father of the child is, and I think that should be made clear in the language of the statutes. I have done just brief research in this area. I had a student a couple years ago who wrote an article on surrogate motherhood, and along with her, I've researched some of the cases that have come down in different jurisdictions. And of course, that was before all these various cases that are developing now. But we found that in the couple of cases around the country that had considered a situation involving artificial insemination and parents who really weren't engaging in sexual intercourse and weren't married at the time that the child was born, that the courts were reluctant to enforce the contract or to disallow the rights of the father. These were cases where the mother wished to keep the child and wished to have the father help her give birth to the child, but didn't wish to have the father have any interest in the child following the birth of the child. Courts were reluctant to cut off the rights of the father, and I would think that, you know, in the same sense, one might, if a court were faced with this, one might think that the court would be reluctant to cut off the rights of the mother if the mother, following the birth of the child, wished to be involved in rearing the child and wished to have some custodial relationship with the child. So I think if you want to legalize it, you probably do need some statute. I'm just not sure myself whether this is the best language, but you know, I think you probably do need some language to amend the common law in this area. One other suggestion that I might have would be that if we were to enact a statute similar to this one, we might want to make some kind of window in the law which would give the mother an opportunity, at least for a short time following the birth, to decide whether or not she wished to surrender her child for adoption by the wife of the natural father. And that would make it then more analogous to the adoption statutes. About all I have.
Further questions?
Yes, Professor, is the in the adoption statutes where it allows a woman to change her mind afterwards, is the public policy behind that purely the best interest of the child? Or is there a recognition that women who have not birthed children may be unaware of the bonding that takes place and make a deal before they understand it?
I think a lot of it has to do with the latter, that the mother has an interest in the child that she may not even understand until after the birth of the child. And at least some of the cases have spoken to the point that it can be coercive to force someone to sign on the dotted line about a child that they haven't even seen yet and that they haven't given birth to yet. And that person ought not to be required to do that until she has seen, she's had an opportunity to see the child and make up her mind after the birth of the child. So it's partially, I guess, the best interest, but it's also, I think, the interest that the mother has in the natural tie to her child.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll close the hearing on 3307 and open the hearing on 3197. Does everybody here have 3197, the dash one and the dash two amendments? Should have it either in the handouts for today or it already in your files.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Counsel, if you would describe the dash one, well, let me preface that with You will recall, committee members, House Bill 3025, Representative Hooley testifying, and the main proponent of 3025 has worked with Representative Bauman on the Dash 1 Amendment 3197, along with the proponents. And the Dash 1 amendments, I think, speak to that. Council, can you describe what is being accomplished in the Dash 1 amendments?
All right. The Dash 1 amendments, basically just going through them on the sheet that you have before you, subsection 1 is essentially kind of a quasi-policy statement that wants to emphasize that the best interest of the child must be looked to, and it also brings in explicitly that consideration needs to be given to the physical custodians of children. Going down into new sub 2, in line 19, the inclusion of or wardship was also in the original bill as introduced. And the purpose of that was to make it clear that it applies in juvenile court. They deleted in section 2, and also on page 2 in sub 3, they deleted the reference to circuit court. It's now just court, because some counties have county courts. So this just kind of cleans it up from that standpoint.
Council, may I ask a question? This amendment then would refer to custody and visitation rights of foster parent, step-parent, grandparent, or relative by blood or marriage who has created these emotional ties.
Well, it's not limited to that. That is not intended to be an exclusive list. I mean, any person including but not limited to is the language. So it's sort of any non-parent who's developed these sort of psychological and, you know, emotional ties, whatever.
But at least it's directed at those enough to have them named.
Yes, yes.
What's the effect of lines 24 and 25 removing that, and how does that fit into the rest of the bill?
Well, essentially, that sentence has been deleted to kind of clean up the bill. There was some confusion as to what precisely that sentence required, and I believe it was Judge Norblad who recommended that be deleted. I mean, the effect is that it does allow intervention in a dissolution situation.
Did it before prohibit intervention in a dissolution?
Well, I think that was some of the ambiguities. I think it was construed, you know, that it did do that, but it was unclear. That was the problem.
What else has this amendment done to perhaps narrow the scope of those who might intervene in conjunction with widening the scope by removing an ambiguity that could be interpreted to have before this time prohibited intervention in the dissolution itself?
Well, I don't know if I exactly understand your question. I mean, it makes it clear that the intervention can be at any point. You don't need, before it was hard to know if you were supposed to wait until moments before, you know that a dissolution proceeding is going to be filed, and this intervention could take place just before, if you had to wait until after. So it basically has just opened up the time frame for filing your intervention.
Are there not limitations put on here by what kind of ties one must have before they can petition the court?
Yes.
Can you speak to those?
Yes. On page 2 and on page 3, you will notice that the definition of child-parent relationship has been substantially expanded.
That's what you got to have to get into court.
Yes. Yes. It's been expanded to make it clear that the person intervening has to have had physical custody of a child. And it goes on to speak, you know, of all the things, supply the child with food, you know, all the various necessary, so that a person, I mean, a daycare operator, for instance, couldn't qualify, which was a concern under the original definition. Another amendment that should be pointed out is that on page 2, in the new sub 5, they have deleted the for two or more years at that point. It now reads, the petitioner establishes a prima facie case under this section if the petitioner shows that the petitioner has maintained a child-parent relationship with the child with substantial continuity. The for two or more years was deleted at that point over concerns of, you know, very young children, children under 2 years of age. The two or more years was seen as kind of a roadblock to people who had established these relationships with very young children. However, it should be pointed out that on page 3, under the definition of child-parent relationship as regards foster parents, it states that it is not a child-parent relationship unless the relationship has continued for a period exceeding 2 years. So the limitation has been kept with respect to foster parents.
Representative Bauman, you want to follow up and supplement counsel's comments? Because I know you've been involved with the Dash 1 amendments, and if you would speak to the people who have been involved, and including Representative Cooley and HB 3025.
Yes, we did. I met with a group of people, including representatives from Children's Services Division, the Committee for Oregon Families, Juvenile Rights Project, and Representative Hooley's office on 3197, and we considered these amendments. I don't think that there is opposition at this point, although I don't see any argument to CSD's request, which I think we all have, that the page 3, line 8 2-year period be extended to 3 years. That is consistent with their policy that foster parents not be adoptive parents, and that families who wish to adopt not use foster parenting as a way to get in a better position. It sounds like a heartless thing to say, but I think that CSD has some good policy reasons for taking that position, and I'd like to support them on that. So I think what I'd like to do is just hand engross that amendment, or propose that we hand engross that amendment.
That won't be very difficult.
Hand engross the 3 for the 2.
Exactly.
Well, when you move this, we can take care of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let me describe my intent on this. We have a Dash 2 amendment, which I do not intend to have moved today, but I will talk to that in just a bit.
May I make one other point, Mr. Chair? I'm a little bit concerned. Maybe this is a question that counsel can answer for me, because we did discuss this change. It's on line 21 on page 2. There is a fairly straightforward way of addressing the problem of children under age 2 or under age 3. It's a fairly straightforward. It's straightforward enough to state for a substantial portion of the child's life and allow the court to interpret that for a child under 2, according to expert testimony or whatever would come in. It really is a policy question, and I think that what the committee sees on line 21 is a policy decision that was made by the gathered
group, that we just bump that out and allow the court to determine what substantial continuity is. The horror story that was presented was from Judge Norblad, and that was that a child that had lived with somebody for, you know, 2 years, 364 days, got sent back to live in a hovel in Mexico.
Mexico.
Right.
And so the judge couldn't have waited to have the hearing the following day.
We should have asked the question while the judge was here. But we have avoided that same problem coming up again in the future.
Representative Bauman, is it your interest or your intent to move the Dash One amendment today?
I'd like to move the Dash One amendment right now, Mr. Chair.
Let me see if I can interpret that. Representative Bauman moves the Dash One amendment, except on page 3, line 8, substituting the last word of the sentence, substituting the word 3 and deleting the word 2. Is that the motion you wish to make?
That's a brilliant translation of my motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I will place the motion of the Dash One amendments as amended to the printed bill. Is there a further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Representative Bauman, I think I asked, and I'm not sure that you responded, so let me ask. So we've got it on the record. Representative Hooley's position on this bill as amended and her concerns as presented originally to this committee on House Bill 3025. Can you put that on the record?
Absolutely. Representative Hooley's representative participated in the discussions that resulted in the amendments which we have just adopted. I will assume from that participation, and since there was no objection and, in fact, active cooperation in the consensus of the group, that Representative Hooley is of like mind with the amendments we've just adopted.
Well, okay. Then let me ask counsel to make sure that Representative Hooley is aware of our next scheduled work session on this bill and of the form of the amendments that we've adopted, so that she can have the opportunity to ask to be invited to that. And make double sure on that, Judy. The next item in here are the Dash 2 amendments, which deal with the issue of grandparents and visitation. I'm going to just describe to the committee what's the chair's intent. It's not my intent today to place a motion on this amendment, and I would like to bring 3197 back up for a work session as soon as possible. And at that time, I've had inquiries on this subject matter. At that time, I would ask counsel to invite those persons that we know of that are interested in this subject matter to put their concerns in this area on the record, and specifically to speak of the form of this amendment. And at that time, we'll take that invited testimony, and it's certainly the chair's intention to be liberal in allowing such testimony on the subject matter. And that would include, but not be limited to, Representative Springer's office, Representative Campbell's office, Senator Cease's office, and I think there are some others, but that we know of. And so that would be my intent. But counsel, do you think, now that we're here and we got the Dash 2 in front of us, that you could describe what they do so that the members of the sub will have that information available between now and the next time we put it up?
Well, just very generally.
Well, just one second. Representative Dix.
I'm interested in the amendments, and I don't know if this is proper, and I would be happy to be corrected by the chair. but there is another bill that deals with this, a bill on its own that deals with a similar subject, and perhaps through our discussion, council may be able to tell us the differences between the amendments that are offered and the bill that I think also was introduced this session. Is that possible?
Yeah, today.
Not today. I'm not aware of the bill.
Let me ask Virginia to do that at the opening of our next work session. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm not sure of the bill number.
We have it.
2627.
But council, if you would describe the -2 amendments today, I think that might be helpful too, and would ask you to, for your homework, to describe the differences in 2627 and any other bills that might be pending in that subject matter area.
Okay. Just generally, the -2 amendments amend ORS 109-121, which deals with the visitation rights of grandparents, or in a very general sense. These amendments basically expand the situations under which a grandparent could petition the court for visitation. Essentially, any grandparent could petition during any circuit court proceedings for visitation, whereas the laws that exist now has just very specific situations when a grandparent may do so.
What are those?
Currently it's if a parent of a minor child dies, or if after the commencement of a domestic relations suit, or when the suit is reopened.
Which seems to be pretty wide open to me.
Well, it also, the particular grandparent who may petition is limited. In the instance of one of the parents of the minor child dying, the grandparent who may petition at this point is the parent of the person who has died. In the reopening, after a decree or final order has been entered, it is the parent of the non-custodial parent who can petition. So it's expanded it in that sense, but it has also established a standard that's going to be utilized now. The amendments, the -2 amendments, would require that the grandparent have established significant and ongoing emotional ties with the child before they would be able to petition the court, whereas there is no such standard now.
Council, we'll have you at it again and take a look at the other pending bills that deal with the subject area, and we'll bring this up as quickly as possible for another work session. Are there any other comments on 3197? Then I'll close the work session on 3197. Any other comments, committee members? That's the last item we have today. Hearing none, we're adjourned.